Coming to you live from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's episode 19 of Game On with Cody and John. In this episode's big deal, gaming spaces.
We'll take a look at game rooms and how to build a great one.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
Small World.
Is there room enough in the world to bring this to your gaming table? We'll talk about it.
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John, the original and the best. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all kinds of tabletop games, board games, card games, role-playing games, even the occasional miniatures game.
Occasionally.
Occasionally. And I'm coming to you from beautiful Indianapolis, Indiana, and you know what? We've been working hard tonight.
We have. It's been a rough night, and it's a topical night, because we're going to be talking about what we've been doing.
That's right. Tonight, wherever you might be, we're talking about gaming spaces, building your game room or your gaming basement, something like that. We have spent the last... How many hours tonight?
Many. Man, you have way too many games. You need to adopt the Jones theory 2 years ago.
I think you're right.
Dump some of these games.
We've spent the last several hours moving games from downstairs in my house up into the new Game On studio and game room and my wife's crafting room.
Discotheque.
And lounge and all that kind of stuff. So today we're going to be talking in a very timely manner about gaming spaces, about how to build that great space in your house or apartment or wherever you might live. To play games, and we'll just talk about how to do that on a small budget or on an even grand scale budget, and just how to make a great place for gaming.
Absolutely. And in our Buy, Try, or Deny, we have the new hotness. We have Small World.
That's
by
right.
Days of Wonder.
Great game by Davis. Well, it might be a great game. Hey, we'll talk about it.
I will say I have liked every Days of Wonder game until now. Why don't you tune in? We'll find out.
That was a good radio.
That was a good tease right there.
That was pretty good.
After the break.
But as always, our episode starts out with the Game On inbox, which starts right
immediately.
It's time for the Game On inbox. Here you'll find gaming news, information, discussion, as well as feedback from you, the listener. Send questions, comments, and brilliant ideas to gameoninbox@gmail.com. That's gameoninbox@gmail.com. Let's double-click on our inbox and see what we find.
Well, as always, we kick things off with the Game On inbox, and to lead that off, games we've been playing. Now, as we mentioned last episode, John is very seriously training for his HeroScape tournament reappearance at Gen Con. You've done one once, right?
That's right. I've done one once. I got out in the first round. It was not.
That's not
going to
happen
time.
Again.
And you know what? I also did is that was the year that they gave out the Sir Hawthorne promotional figure,
sure.
Which now is worth a couple hundred bucks on eBay. And I just popped the thing right out of there and like, oh, I'll just use it in my army. Now, some people would say, well, of course
no,
you should do that.
I applaud that. No,
I guess.
Well,
it reminds me actually of the next year at Gen Con. I got the promotional figure solely to sell it on eBay. I mean, I'm you know, I don't mind saying that. If you can get 50 or 60 bucks for it, pays for my Gen Con badge.
Wow.
That's worth more to me than the
You're
what it
a
does
sellout.
In the game. I guess so. But I got the figure, and as I was walking away, these two high school kids were getting their figures, and they were like so excited about it. And I said, yeah, it's pretty exciting. You can get about 50, 60 bucks for eBay on eBay for that. And they looked at me with these daggers and said, or you can play it in the game.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh.
Common gamer indeed.
Hit a nerve.
but regardless of that, we are training to make sure John does not have another first round exit. So we've been playing quite a bit of HeroScape lately.
Oh, it's been a lot of fun. And we've kind of pushed past the setup time and the amount of time that takes. And we just figured if we can get the board set up, we can play two or three games in a row and have a real great time with it.
Yeah, actually, John's progress so far has been wanting a little bit.
been losing quite a bit.
Yeah, I've prescribed many individual HeroScape drills that he may wish to partake in if he's going to get better, because quite frankly, It was disappointing.
See, I figure that I can look at it the way a lot of golfers look at their game. The best way to improve your game is to buy better stuff, right? You obviously need like a $400 driver and a $500 putter. And so if I just keep buying boosters, then that'll immediately make my game better, right?
Well, that apparently has not worked in your game collection theory, as you're not that much better at games.
Okay, let's move on.
But in other games, what other games have you been playing to kind of keep your mind off of HeroScape?
Well, I picked up a game a couple weeks ago from the bargain basement at Walmart. Actually, my wife picked it up because she's really good at finding bargains like that. And a few episodes ago, we mentioned a game called Hyper Slide, which is this little tabletop game for two players, or actually could be even for one player, where you slide these little colored discs under this little bridge, and the electronic thing knows what color you're passing underneath. So that's a fun little game. So they've come up with several of these hyper game toys.
And not very successful, it seems. I guess they keep not. Showing up on the remainder there.
Keep getting for $3. But no, they're actually pretty good. And the newest one that I got is called Hyper Dash.
Whoa.
And what it is it's this little device that looks almost like a handbell with a handle on it. And then these little plastic discs that are different colors and have different numbers on them. And it's a much more physical game than Hyper Slide, which you just play at a table. But the basic game is that you spread these little discs out in a room, or you can even play it outside. We played it at a park last weekend. And you can just spread them all out on the grass or whatever, pretty far away from one another. And then the little machine that you're holding in your hand that looks like a bell will tell you which disc you need to strike. And striking it means that you just put the bell part down on the disc and just push. And it engages with some little plastic pieces underneath there. And then it'll make a noise. And then it'll tell you what the next one is that you're supposed to touch. And you basically just dart around, dash around, and strike these little discs. And there's even more complicated levels where it'll say something like something called CompuStrike, where it'll say CompuStrike 4+1, and then you have to do the math in your head.
Math is hard.
And then you go find
especially when you're running.
Yeah, and you have the number 5 disc, and you have to go and get that one, or you have to hit something twice or something like that. So for, the $3 I got it for, it was a lot of fun. It's really good for all ages, too. My little 3-year-old daughter, she can play.
Wears the kids
well
out.
It does, yeah. And that's wears me out, too. Yeah. So that's a pretty fun one. I've also had a chance. I've been looking for games that I can play with my 6-year-old, because he's getting to the point now where he can understand basic math. He can read a little bit as basic words and phrases and that kind of stuff. And so I've been looking for games that I can start to play out of my normal collection that aren't necessarily kids' games that he might be able to play. So I decided to
Twilight Imperium.
it's on the list. It's on the list. But we decided to break out Memoir 44, which is, I think on the box, is like 8 and up, something like that. Which sounds like it's about right, because we were able to set it up. He was real excited about the little army men.
Right.
And he kept wanting to know who the bad guys and who the good guys were, and so that got into the nice ethical discussion about World War II and all that kind of stuff. And so he played, of course, the Americans. I played the Germans, and I think that he might have won, actually. We picked a scenario where he was very much it was in his favor from the beginning anyway. But he knew how to count the spaces and everything and roll the dice, and it was a little bit clunky, but I think that with a little bit of practice, he should be able to play, and I think he really enjoyed it too. So if you have a small boy or girl that is around that age, you might want to give Memoir 44 or any of those other ones, Battle Lore or Commands and Colors Ancients, give those a try with your kid.
Introduce them to war early.
That's right.
Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor?
No.
Animal House? Just nothing?
Nothing, no.
Okay, sorry.
I haven't seen.
Old one.
I don't think I've even seen that movie before.
Oh my gosh!
Okay, I got to put that one on the list. All right. Well, what about you, Cody? What have you been playing lately?
Last weekend I got a chance to play in a buddy of mine's monthly Hollow Earth Expedition role playing game.
Mm-hmm.
Always good. He's doing almost like a super science pulp kind of a way to do it.
Super science?
Yeah, kind of more on the mad science bend of things. It's not in the Hollow Earth. It's all surface world type of stuff. And he's actually put a lot of real world history into it, which has made it pretty interesting. So
neat.
I'm playing a French medic. I forget his full name, but it's Dr. Guillaume.
Do you use the accent?
Oh, I'm talking ridiculous accent.
Outrageous French accent.
We must heal this man after some wine. Sorry if you're from France, and that was really horrible. And another thing I played this past weekend with my fiance was a little game from Game Right called Castle Keep, and it's this kind of just little light
Tile-laying game.
And it's something we've really grown to like the past few months. But this brings up an interesting question is, I need opinions from you, the listener, on good two-player games that we could play. Any complexity level, it can be light, it can be heavy. But as we looked through my gaming collection, we found that most of it was three players and up.
Oh, okay.
I was just looking through, I'm like, oh, no. And there's some games it's like, could you play Talisman two-player? Yeah, but... Yeah. Could you play Fury of Dracula two-player? Yeah, but, you know. Mm-hmm. We need games that are more built for two-player. So if you have any brilliant suggestions or just snarky comments, you can shoot it to us. You can shoot it to us at the Game On Inbox.
At gameoninbox@gmail.com.
And I know Kaylin and I would love your opinion so we can get some great two-player gaming going.
I'm just wondering how many emails you're going to get saying, you know, Carcassonne's a good two-player game.
Hey, well.
Deleted.
Yeah. She likes Carcassonne, so... Okay. I might bite the bullet now and then and suggest something else.
Yeah, and for you listeners who have listened to the show for a while, you know, keep in mind Cody's tastes in things, and I think his fiance Kaylin has kind of similar tastes in games a little bit. She might lean more in the Euro
she
direction
leans
than
more
you
Euro.
Do. Yeah, but
nobody's perfect, huh?
And speaking of that, I'll go ahead and give you a suggestion for a really good two-player game that is Euro.
Oh, okay.
That you might like, and that's the game Keltis, mm-hmm. or Lost Cities the Board Game. This was the 2008 Spiel des Jahres winner.
Okay.
We don't care.
Yeah.
But it's a game by Rainer Knizia that is based on the Lost Cities card game. Have you played Lost
Cities? I played Lost Cities once or twice.
Okay, so it's
okay.
It's like a board game form of that, and I think it's easier to see what's going on and I guess do the math in your head than it is with the card game.
Yeah.
I have the actual German version that's called Keltis. And it's got the typical Rainer Knizia non-theme where... You're like trying, it's the way of the stone. You're trying to get these stones to go up these paths that are going to get you more points.
Right.
But the little bits are kind of neat. And they even come with these little four-leaf clover-shaped meeples, which my wife has called kleeples. Clover meeples.
I got to see what you did there.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of clever. But for Lost Cities, the board game, they've put it in the same theme as Lost Cities, that you're this explorer who's going on these different missions that are different colors. Again, it's tacked on totally, but it only takes about 45 minutes to play, and it's a lot of fun for two.
I might have to look that one up.
All right. Well, moving on in the gaming news direction, Cody's got some news from our not so much friends at Wizards of the Coast.
Our acquaintances at Wizards of the Coast.
There you go.
A few weeks ago, Wizards of the Coast actually pulled all of their PDFs. Now, if you're familiar with sites like RPG Now or Drive-Thru RPG, we may link one of those in the show notes. And by we, of course, I always mean John.
It'll only cost you $5, Cody, for me to put that in the show notes.
Fantastic. You can usually buy PDFs of popular role-playing game books. And actually, recently, that has become a very popular medium, and especially for your small and indie press games that pretty much only release in PDF form just to cut down on costs. They don't have to publish it. You know, ship it, things of that nature.
Right.
Now, Wizards of the Coast with 4th edition had begun offering their books in PDF format, but a few weeks ago, they pretty much without warning just pulled all of their PDFs. Even if you had bought them previously, you were not allowed to download them anymore, because usually you get like 5 or 6 downloads or something, you know, per thing.
Isn't that how you got your 4th edition book, or did you... Wasn't that right? Oh, you actually got the book?
Yeah.
Oh, I must have been thinking.
I bought Hollow Earth Expedition
but okay. Different company.
Yeah. But they pulled everything, and I think they were citing, you know, a lot of kind of piracy issues. But, I mean, there were a lot of people who had legitimately paid for it that were rightly kind of ticked. They're like, well, you know, that's how I, you know, have different, you know, copies of it in different locations and things like that. And from what I've heard, Wizards is working with that, you know, to give them kind of a download window to get any last downloads out. But they're really cutting down because rumor is, and this is completely conjecture here, so conjecture on with Cody and John. their 4th edition is not the cash cow that they thought it would be. I know for a fact, at least in all the RPGA events that I've been to, the piracy is pretty rampant. Like,
really?
Like you'll see, you know, people that bring their laptops, they'll pretty much just trade books. They'll say,
oh,
hey,
nice.
Do you have this? Do you have this? Yeah, sure. You know, they're just...
Oh, so you can sort of see a reason for why they did that then.
Yeah, but I've noticed just recently on the Wizards website, the first kind of big adventure they released for 4th edition, it was called Keep on the Shadowfell. It includes some quick start rules with it. It's now a complete free PDF that you can download from the Wizards website.
Oh,
so I mean, they are desperately trying to get
people
into this.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm thinking they just lost. They lost more than they thought when they switched over from 3-5 to 4, especially the way they did it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the way they did it was one where, they didn't want to tip their hand and obviously, you know, say, hey, we're coming out with this new edition and get people to stop, you know, spending their money. But they pretty much just categorically denied that they were doing 4th edition up until Gen Con a few years ago. And they're like, oh, yeah, we're doing it.
See, I think that's not a very smart way to go. I think you end up disillusioning a whole lot of people as they did. But I mean, one in contrast, and this is a different kind of game and a different company, but Privateer Press is just about to release the Mark II rules for their War Machine miniatures game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's coming out in January of 2010, but just this past month in April, they released the Mark II field test rules. Mm-hmm. For anybody who wanted to download them, you just had to register on their site and you could download them and play them and then give your feedback. So I think it gave a lot of ownership of the game to the people that play it.
A lot of transparency there. So
yeah, and I think that Privateer Press's stock rose quite a bit for the people that play that game regularly. And so, you know, hopefully when the rules come out, there'll be a lot less complaining. Mm-hmm. There's always a little bit of complaining right. by people who, you know, I can't believe you changed my game. But I think that's one... A better way to go than the way that Wizards went with this.
Yeah, so be on the lookout because Wizards, it seems they're really forcing the 4th edition stuff now. I mean, obviously, yeah, they're trying to make a buck, but it at least to my eyes, kind of reading between the lines, and I could be completely wrong, like I said, complete conjecture here, it seems like they're starting to be in panic mode just a little bit with their things. They're really pushing RPGA, and I know they had a bunch of layoffs just a few months after 4th edition hit, so... Mm. We'll see where it goes.
It'll be interesting to see what their presence is like at Gen Con,
mm-hmm.
because that usually is
an indication usually a good indicator,
of the health of their company. And, you know, I remember 2-3 years ago when, you know, about a third of the dealer hall was filled with a whole bunch of Wizards of the Coast, you know, big stuff. So, yeah, we'll see what happens this year at Gen Con. And, well, we want to move on then now to some emails that we've gotten from some of our listeners. And one email we got was from a guy named Quinn Munderlin from Carrollton, Texas. That's real near to where I grew up in Hearst, Texas, just between Dallas
Beautiful
and
Hearst, Texas.
Beautiful Hearst, the Hearst, Euless, Bedford, Mid-Cities area there. So a little shout out to
I'll take your word for it.
DFW there. but he just said some real nice things about our show. We appreciate that. And then said, I'm listening to the baseball episode, which was our last episode, episode 18, but haven't quite finished with it. I listened during my commute to and from work. I'm a big fan of baseball, and this may be my favorite show yet. Thank you. But I have to say, y'all are way off base. Ha ha. You gonna get that?
Ah, very good.
About Pizza Box Baseball, in my opinion. I think it's a great game that brings through the feel of the subtleties and tense drama of the game. It especially shines with the advanced rules and using a league or playoff style. So, you know, we didn't quite agree with that one, but,
it's always worth another try.
You know, I think so too. Yeah. So if we get a chance to, maybe at Origins this year, I'm sure they'll have a copy of that.
If you're Cubbin Quinn, we'll play some Pizza Box Baseball.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he says, I haven't had a chance to try the other baseball games you review for the show yet, but it makes me want to take a closer look at them. And, you know, that's really a goal of ours is that when we present these games, we do hope that you guys will go out and try them and check them out.
Or buy them or deny them as appropriate.
We hit the ball into your court as far as that goes. And then he ends the show.
Hit the ball into your court? Are you going tennis?
We hit the ball into your outfield.
There you go.
I don't know. but he says, anyway, love the show and I look forward to many more. Go Rangers.
Yeah, go Reds.
So another Texas Rangers fan there. So Quinn, thanks so much. And actually, we want to also recognize that Quinn sent us a very nice donation.
Thanks, Quinn. By hitting Rangers.
Oh, there you go. You can be bought.
I love Nolan Ryan. He's fantastic.
He was fantastic. But he sent a very nice donation via our donation button on the Game On Podcast website. So thank you so much for that. We just recently actually had to increase our bandwidth account due to the fact that we were releasing slightly larger shows, mm-hmm. and so we had to just increase the amount of storage space. So that really helps to keep the show running. So
absolutely, and then 100% of everything goes right back to the show. So.
Absolutely, we don't keep any of it to fuel our Bentleys or our Lamborghinis. Or
where are you keeping your Bentley? I drive a Saturn, man. Come on.
Okay, I drive a '93 Mercury Sample.
You win, or rather, you lose.
Yeah. All right. So thanks again, Quinn, for that email. We also received an email from Jesse Hickle, and you know what? I don't have it up here right now. Let me find it. Preparation on. so he answered our contest trivia question, which we'll be talking about the winners of that contest in just a minute. But he says, I'm totally with you about the AL-NL thing. Cody
good
mentioned
man. How good
the
man.
Pitchers should bat. He says, the DH is a cop-out, though it hurt my head to hear you bad-mouthing the Cubs.
Whatever.
hey, when the Cubs finally win a World Series, let's play some Carcassonne and duke this thing out.
Well, that'll be nice because I'll already be dead.
anyways,
my kids can play it with you.
It says, baseball is my favorite sport, too, and I really appreciate the episode about various games. I continue to be impressed by the amount of variety you throw into your show. Keep it up. So thank you very much, Jesse. We appreciate that, and we appreciate all the emails that we've gotten from folks. We had quite a bit of response to our contest.
Absolutely.
We had our last episode where we're going to be giving away two copies of Harry's Grand Slam Baseball from...
Hi!
not Harry Carey. Oh. courtesy of Out of the Box Publishing. And so we have our winners. If you'll remember from the last episode, there were two ways that you could enter the contest. What was the first way you could enter the contest, Cody?
Well, the first way you could do it is simply go on iTunes and write a review. It could be favorable or not favorable, but we tend to like the favorable ones.
And I think we pretty much got favorable
reviews.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So thanks for that.
We can never get enough. You know, we like to share the game on love, so definitely hop on iTunes.
Yeah, we'd like to hop up the ratings and the rankings there on the gaming podcast. So
absolutely.
Any help you could give us in that direction would be greatly appreciated. So we had folks that entered that side of the contest, and then we had the second way to enter the contest, which was to answer our baseball gaming trivia question.
Right.
And that question was
we asked what I guess now former Major League Baseball player actually founded his own game company.
Yep. And so we'll go ahead and just we collected all of the correct answers. We had a lot of correct answers. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any incorrect answers.
Right. It was a softball question.
It was
the plate.
So starting off with the iTunes review part of it, which mm-hmm. is going to be the folks that gave us the iTunes reviews are in one pool to win a copy of the game. And so we put all the names into a hat, and our winner is Justin Nordstrom.
Justin, the Nationals, Nordstrom.
Oh, not sure if that's a good nickname.
Sorry.
but Justin, congratulations. You are a winner of a copy of Harry's Grand Slam Baseball. And then the other part of the contest, the trivia question, and the answer to the trivia question, Cody, was?
Kurt Schilling.
Kurt Bloody Sock Schilling.
as one listener put it.
As one listener did put in his entry. It was the founder of Multiman Publishing. Kurt was a real big player of Advanced Squad Leader and other sort of tabletop war games. And so he founded Multiman Publishing in, I think, 2003, something like that, to get the old ASL modules to keep those in publication. He's also very big into like online
he's big World of Warcraft
yeah
guy.
Big MMORPG guy. Mm-hmm. And so he's kind of a gamer, kind of surprising too. He just when I see him, when I would see him, yeah, he just doesn't look like he'd be a gamer, but that's exciting to have a baseball player as part of our community. So anyway, so of all the people who answered that question correctly, which was quite a few, our winner of the other copy of Harry's Grand Slam Baseball is Steve Krebs.
Steve, Kansas City Royals Krebs.
Boy, you're just batting zero with
the
nicknames.
The Kansas City Royals are in first place.
Are they really?
They were close last time I checked.
Okay. So Steve is the winner of the second copy of Harry's Grand Slam Baseball. So congratulations to Justin.
Congrats.
And to Steve.
You're
going to
love it, guys.
Yep. So for both of you guys, we would like for you to send your address, your home mailing address to us at the Game On Inbox at...
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
And if you'll send that to us, then we'll get that copy of Harry's Grand Slam Baseball out to you. And thanks so much for entering. Thanks to everybody who entered. And keep in mind that the contest that we have here, you know, we're not going to lie to you. We're not a podcast that has 50,000 listeners.
No, absolutely not.
So
not yet.
We're on our way. But so if you enter our contest, you've got a pretty good shot. You know, we're not talking about
a fair shot.
You got a pretty fair shot. So I would encourage you, if you think you've got a shot at it, just go ahead and send that email or answer that question and get involved. So that's our contest for this episode. Let's see, what else have we got here on the list here? There's one website that I wanted to talk about that has I've been following for the last few weeks, and it's cracking me up, and so I just felt like I had to mention it. But we are a podcast, so we're kind of in the audio media, but there's a whole lot
good
of, thank you,
you're learning.
there's a whole lot of other great websites that do game reviews and things like that in a blog format, like the written word. And one of the ones that I really, really enjoy is called Drake's Flames. And it's put out by a guy named Matt Drake. And he's actually, I think, involved with a company called Vixen Tour Games. Mm-hmm. But you can find that website at drakesflames.blogspot.com. Put a link to it in the show notes. But the title of the website is Drake's Flames, Crassly Opinionated Game Reviews, and Occasional Bathroom Humor. Updated 3 times a week, whether we need it or not. And he has some of just the greatest, snarkiest, humorous game reviews that I've ever heard. He gives Tom Vassell a hard time, which I got a lot of respect
absolutely.
For that. If he gives Tom Vassell
two thumbs
a hard
up.
Time. but you know, I would encourage you to check his stuff out. And I think he has some other affiliations that you might want to look into as well. But give Matt Drake some love there with Drake's Flames.
And speaking of giving Tom Vassell a hard time, make sure you stop and see us at Origins, where we'll be joining Tom and other podcasters on a panel they're having there.
That's right. The Origins event guide just came out just a few days ago. And I think the podcast panel is going to be on Friday at 11 o'clock. I don't have the... location down yet, but you can find that if you go to the Origins website. You can download the event catalog and see, but it's called Meet the Board Game Podcasters, and it's going to be Tom Vassell, I think perhaps Scott Nicholson, Cody and I will be there, and a lot more. So if you listen to this show and other shows, and you probably do, if you listen to this one, you probably listen to more than one, come and meet us all and ask us some questions. We'd love to meet you.
Absolutely. Well, yes, it is that time again where I'm insanely jealous of where John works. He gets to play games with a bunch of people at work, and frankly, I don't get to.
Sorry.
So, as we always do, let's take another trip to the lunch table.
The lunch table. When you're on the job, what better way to spend your lunch hour than playing games with good friends? Let's see what's on the lunch menu this week.
All right, welcome to another edition of The Lunch Table. This episode, we had a chance to play the game Bang.
A banga!
at lunch. The new fourth edition of Bang just came out. This game's been around for quite a while, produced by Da Vinci Games, and designed by Emiliano Sciarra.
Sure.
That's how you pronounce that.
Sure.
And so this is a card game that is meant to sort of mimic an Old West shootout. And if you, especially since it was designed by an Italian guy, all of the rules are in Italian. Well, there's a set of rules in that are in Italian. And you can sort of think of this as being in the genre of like the spaghetti westerns of the 1970s. Clint Eastwood, you know, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Fistful of Dollars, that sort of a thing. And so in this game, you're going to take on the role of either the sheriff in a town, the deputy sheriff, an outlaw, or a renegade. And so depending on what role you get, you're going to have different victory conditions. And so you know, you're going to have cards that have different kinds of guns on them. You're going to have cards that will allow you to draw more cards. But the main card in the game is the card that says, Bang.
A banga.
And this is the card where you're going to shoot people. So the way it's going to work is that you're going to start off by drawing a roll, and you'll keep that secret. And you'll all be sitting around. This game is best played if you play it like in a circle, usually. Mm-hmm. And you're going to keep that roll a secret unless you're the sheriff. If you're the sheriff, you're going to reveal yourself. And so the sheriff is... the main goal for the sheriff is to kill all of the outlaws. You know, the main goal for the deputy sheriff is to protect the sheriff and to kill all the outlaws. And then the goal of the outlaws is to kill the sheriff. And the goal of the renegade is to be the last one standing. So he basically wants to kill all of the outlaws and then be the last one to kill the sheriff. And so you're going to keep that role a secret unless you're the sheriff. And then you get drawn a character card. And there's lots of different character cards. They're usually kind of kitschy takes on like Butch Cassidy, but it would be like, you know, Butch Castleton or something like that.
Nice.
And
Butch and Castleton.
Each character is going to have a different special ability of some kind, and we'll also have a certain number of life tokens. Now, if you happen to have played the previous versions of Bang, Bang is a card game, and in this fourth edition, they've added a little bit more chrome, I guess, to the game. And so you're going to get these player mats that you'll set down that have spots to put all of your cards. And also, in the previous game, you had to use the back of a card to sort of keep track of what your number of bullet tokens were that you had left. In this game, you're actually going to get some cardboard cutout bullet tokens to put on your player mat to indicate how much life you have left. So that was real nice. Artwork on the cards is pretty cool. And so you're going to get that a player mat. You get all of your bullets. You'll get all of your stuff. And then it's time to play. And so you're going to start with the sheriff, and you're going to have a certain number of cards in your hand that's equal to the number of bullet tokens that you currently have, so the amount of life that you have. And so on your turn, it's real simple. The turns are real simple. You draw two cards, And then you can play any number of cards that you want that you could possibly play on the table. So you might have a card for a weapon. Everybody starts off with a Colt 45, which will allow you to shoot the person who is right next to you. Each of the weapons is going to have a range to them. So a range of one means that you can shoot the guy on your left or the guy on your right. If you have a range of two, then you can do those two folks or the two folks that are sitting next to them. So you're kind of going around, and that's how far your gun can shoot. So you might get a better weapon card at some point, and you can lay that down. You can only have one weapon in play at a time. There's also cards available that'll help you to get life back. If you, those are beer cards. So if you drink a beer,
La birra,
then you can gain a life token back. There are things like a stagecoach, which allow you to draw a couple of cards. There'll be cards that allow you to steal a card from an opponent. So all these things are going to allow you to sort of mess with the people that are next to you. And then at some point, you're going to want to try to shoot somebody. So as I said, you can play as many cards as you want on the table, but you can only play one bang card. And so you have to have a gun of some kind. And then you play the bang card on an opponent that is within the range of your gun. And then they have the option of either just taking it, in which case they would lose a life or lose one of those bullet tokens. Or they can play a card out of their hand, like the missed card, which is called Mancato.
Mancato.
You could have a miss card, or there might be some other cards. You can have a barrel that you can hide behind, so you might have that. There's some other kinds of cards that you can do to sort of dodge those sort of attacks. And so you just kind of go around in a circle playing until the victory condition is met by whoever it is being eliminated. There is a player elimination aspect of this game, because if you're out, then you're out. And so you could find yourself sitting and waiting for a long time for the game to be over with. But it goes pretty quickly. And so I really do enjoy the fourth edition of this game and the extra stuff that comes in the box. It's a slightly bigger box, and it's a pretty good game. But enough of me jabbering on about the rules to the game. Let's go to the lunch table and find out what everybody else thought of the game. Okay, welcome to another edition of The Lunch Table. We're here with at the beautiful cafeteria here at my job, and we've just played a game of Bang! And we've got a group of six people playing, and so we'll just go around the table and just say your name. And as we've heard some of these names before on the show, but this is my gaming crew here. So go ahead, to my left, we got...
Boom! Tick-a-tick-a-tick-a-pow! Pow! Single up.
This is Nathan.
Karen.
Jenny.
And David.
Okay, so we had a six-player game. As I mentioned in the review of the rules, this game is for 4 to 7 players. And so I think 6 is actually a pretty good number to play with for this game. And I think 7 would be just as fine, too. 4 seems like it might be a little bit low, I'm not sure. But
3 is out of the question.
3 is right out. And we have a really nice cross-section of folks of different gaming tastes, I guess, from nearly no gaming taste whatsoever to really kind of... that's you, Karen.
I thought it was Nathan.
I like Super Mario Brothers.
To folks who are really more into hardcore gaming. So just give me your impressions of the game. What did you think? We only played one game, so it was really quick, but was this one fun? Would this be something you'd want to play again?
Definitely, yes.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, what was good about it? What was bad about it? What was fun about it?
I got to drink beer and live.
Beer is the power of life.
All right, so as we mentioned,
not
the rules: if you drink a beer at the very last second, there you can gain a life, which is it's kind of fun. Beer equaling life in the Old West, apparently, and it's got a pretty nice little sort of screw your neighbor mechanic of being able to pick someone that you don't particularly like in real life and shoot them if you want to. So anything that may... It's what we call a meta game, when there's something, the game behind the game, and so that might be going on in this game.
So we all don't like David anymore.
Yeah, David was our sheriff.
Disadvantage.
Yeah, so, and we also found that Jenny was sitting to David's right, and David was the sheriff. And what did you find... It was kind of difficult being in that position, right?
Yeah, because he took my cards.
Yeah, so she was the victim of like a bunch of stuff right off the bat, and you know, and wasn't able to get a turn for, you know, five turns before it came around to her. So who would you say this game is suited for? I mean, if you were in a game store and you saw this game and now you've played it once, who would this game be good for? Who would it not be good for?
Children.
Yeah, not good.
Well, not good for children.
I'm sure there's an age requirement.
Involves drinking and shooting.
Do you want your little girl saying, "Daddy, I drink a beer"?
And lived. I think, and strangely enough, this game is for ages 8 and up.
Wow. So I would say no. A little bit older than that.
A little bit older? Okay.
Yeah.
No, I think it would be good for any lighthearted group. Something a little diverse, a little different from what you normally play.
Yeah. I mean, do you think this would work at a group of folks that only might play things like Monopoly or Pictionary, that kind of stuff? Could you bring that out in a party environment? You think it would work?
I think so.
I think a party environment would be a very good choice.
Especially once, the hardest part for, especially those type of gamers, are the initial rules that you lay out, because you have the different types of cards that do different types of things. Sometimes that's a little intimidating to a player of that set, but once you get through the initial rules, this game would go so fast.
Yeah.
I almost like it. And then for kind of more hardcore gamers, it's sort of a nice sort of in-between game. You know, in between those two long games that you play, like, hey, let's play a quick game of this, and just sort of this lighthearted thing to go through.
Yeah, definitely. If you already knew the rules, it could be something quick and fun, certainly.
I think it's definitely a game that once you play it once, you kind of want to play it again, because it goes
like
pretty quickly.
Well, we
actually have to head back to work in a second here, but we were just discussing that we wouldn't mind pulling this out and playing it again, so that's a good sign there. It's at a pretty good price point. I think it's about $20 retail, which for a hobby game is pretty good. The components are real nice, I think. You get a nice big deck of cards. You also get these kind of cool player mats that have some really good artwork on them.
Remove the girls from me.
I think Jenny is protesting the fact that there weren't that many female characters.
There
in the,
are, but there's no cards.
So, oh, they didn't have the cards for
she
them?
Wants the English version so she can see.
Right.
She cannot read Italian.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know why, but...
Now, let's talk about that for just a second. The fact that this game is sort of meant to mimic the spaghetti westerns of the 1970s.
Yeah, there was Clint Eastwood.
There's no Clint Eastwood character.
There's a Duke player, so there's a...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And El,
like
El Gringo.
Damn it.
Okay, yeah, so they couldn't get the licensing for the real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you have actually one set of rules that's in English and one set that's in Italian. And all of the text on the cards is in both Italian and English. And actually the larger word is in Italian. So the card that says that you missed doesn't say missed in big letters. It says mancato. And then it says missed. And, you know, so that sort of provides a little bit of a fun flavor to the game, I think. It encourages Italian accents, I think. Yes. So
and handlebar mustache.
And handlebar mustaches and, you know, Ennio Morricone music in the background. So, all right. So, if just kind of going around the table, just if you could give this a rating of kind of like a buy, a try, or a deny, what rating would you give this game? I know we only played it that one time, but just a gut reaction.
I give it a try.
Well, he gives it a try.
He'll
be changing that rating later, but
to a deny buy.
Okay, a try. So
buy but deny that you bought it. That's the key.
All right, Nathan?
I give it a try.
A try as well? Okay, Karen?
Try.
Try. Jenny?
Try.
Try, although she's having trouble with the Italian rules there, so.
Well, read the English side. That might
there's
be a
there's
easier.
Not.
I think he's got a different book.
It's right here, yeah.
It's
a whole separate rule book. Yeah. She's here trying to decipher the Italian rules. That's awesome.
I would actually give it a buy, and I'm actually going to go buy this one.
Oh, good.
Oh,
okay.
Wow.
Boom.
I feel like I've contributed negatively to David's bank account by recommending games to him. I think more than anyone else, David has gone out and bought games because of my...
Yeah.
So you're going to buy it even because you were the sheriff.
I was the sheriff.
And you... Because I thought the one thing with the game was that the sheriff was at a major disadvantage.
He was at a major disadvantage.
Because everybody's just trying to go after him and shoot him and kill him.
But because I lost and I was the sheriff, I want to play a game. One, so I can be the sheriff and win. And two, so I can actually shoot some other sheriff.
And you can probably develop a strategy with this game. Yeah.
Because
your first time around, you're just, okay, what does this card do? I'm going to throw it out and play it. Well, now that you understand all the rules,
because I went through all my ability cards there right at the beginning, and I shouldn't have done that. I should have held back a little bit.
Yeah, I think the sheriff probably has the most difficult decisions in the game. I think he or she has to play their cards the most carefully, because they're, you know, they got the biggest target on their head the entire game.
Yeah, because they're known from off the bat.
So. I played the deputy. I couldn't protect him because he threw all his cards away and then tried to shoot me.
Right, right.
And I meant the renegade. I shouldn't have shot the sheriff. I should have shot anybody else but the sheriff, because that's an instant lose situation for me as a renegade.
Exactly.
Awesome. I didn't think about that.
That's why the deputy stays hidden. Yeah.
So
you can't
if you think about
who.
It, it's still 3-3, because there's a sheriff, deputy, and then renegade, and then you got three outlaws.
And you actually shot me, too.
I shot you every time. You're the only person I shot.
I had to duck.
You killed me, actually.
That's the way I felt about you. The only one that only had 3 life points.
Jenny is upset by the fact that of all the cards that got handed out, she was the only one that had 3 life bullet tokens to start off with. So
everybody else,
but you survived.
She was an outlaw. She still won the game. So.
I'm amazing now.
Well, I'll reserve my judgment on the game until we get back to the Game On Studios. But that's Bang. Thanks so much for playing. And that's another edition of the Lunch Table. Thanks a lot. So thanks to all the guys at work for playing that game with me. And
will Lloyd ever give anything a buy? That's not magic?
Probably not. That's his standard of beauty, definitely.
Yes.
That guy, I tell you what.
Single L.
I got nothing. He's got his theme music every time he introduces himself. It's crazy. Exactly. mostly tries around the table, and David gave the game a buy. My rating for the game is I would probably also give this game a buy, because I think it's a really solid little game. I think if you get the right crowd of people, it's a no-brainer that it's going to be fun. And I found that just sitting around the lunch table there with a very diverse group of folks, when we got up from recording that segment, everybody was talking about how much they liked it. And the ones who were really the gamers, they were talking more deeply about the strategy of it. But even the folks that weren't, you know, still enjoyed it. So, Cody, you've played Bang. Unfortunately,
sure.
You didn't get to play it with us. But give me your impressions of Bang and your buy, try, and deny rating.
Oh, it's definitely a buy for me. What I like about it is that it's not just a card game. It's also... It has a very kind of light social game mechanics as far as the... trying to read people. It almost kind of has an Are You a Werewolf feel to in a weird way, you know, where you're trying to read. It's like, are you a sheriff? Are you a deputy? You know, and it's neat, and it's a load of fun if you get the right group, and if you're just using the Italian and you're all kind of punchy anyway.
I think the Italian is a huge part of it, that if you're able to get those accents going and just
a prigione,
get into the fun of the Catabalu, you know, get into the fun of that, then that makes it even more fun. So.
Yeah, it has enough little quirks that... kind of raise it above a normal card game, and it's a great price, so definitely a buy for me.
All right. Well, that's our edition of the Lunch Table for this episode, and that just about wraps up the Game On inbox. We would invite you to send us any feedback or that you have or any questions or comments to the Game On inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com. So now it's time for us to get into our big deal about gaming spaces.
Let's do it.
And now it's time for the big deal. Whether it's an interview, an in-depth review of a convention or gaming event, or a discussion on a gaming-related topic, every episode of Game On, we will do our very best to answer that eternal, burning question, what's the big deal?
All right, this episode's big deal, a little different from what we've done in the past. Instead of dealing with a game or a type of genre of game, we're talking about where you play your games. And as John mentioned in the open, when we're talking about this mainly because we've been schlepping up all of his games up from the downstairs region and putting them in bookshelves. And I see quite a bit of games still on the floor, so...
I need yet another bookshelf.
You need more bookshelves. But a topic that's always interested me is that... is the idea of gaming rooms, or at least kind of a dedicated gaming space. And I bring this up, I'll give you my own kind of where I'm at.
Some kind of Jones theory? Is that part of
it? No, there's no Jones theory.
Corollary to the Jones theory?
No. I currently have in my apartment, there is a... It's a two-bedroom apartment, but the smaller bedroom is the gaming room. There's a closet, we have the games in there, and that's where we have just kind of a simple round table for games and things of that nature. Now, I know some people who have gaming lofts or gaming basements and just have this immense setup. And then some people where, you know, they just play on their kitchen table, or they just, you know, they kind of have their games stored maybe in the coat closet and they pull out, you know, what they can when they can. And I wanted to open up that discussion. What makes a good gaming space to you? Basically, what's your current setup looking like here, John, now that we're about halfway done with it?
Yeah, well, I'll just tell you, my previous setup was that we have a three-bedroom house, and we have two children who, up until recently, have had their own rooms, and they're ages 6 and 3, and they decided, well, we decided,
yeah,
that, hey, why don't you guys try staying in a room together? And so we've been trying that experiment for the last few months, and it turns out that they really like it, and they really enjoy being in the same room together and keeping each other company. And so we figured that that'll work. It's a boy and a girl, so we figured that'll work for maybe a couple more years, and then we'll want to split them out into their own rooms later. But for now, it seems to be working. And so we moved them into kind of the smaller of the two extra bedrooms that we have.
Nice.
Well, because they're small people. They don't need a whole lot of space. They have
whatever helps you sleep at night.
Okay. And so we're going to turn this other bedroom into a gaming room, podcasting studio, a craft room for my wife, and also a guest bedroom. Because up until then, all of our games have been in bookshelves in the living room and in the kitchen in our house. And they're tastefully done, but it's starting to get overrun a bit as we get more games in. And I could sort of see in my wife's eyes that, you know, she would prefer for them not to be out on display in the middle of the living room. So we wanted to get a separate space together. And she figures that if they're up here, then, you know, I can display them as proudly or and as prominently as I want.
Sure.
So we're sitting right now in the new space here, the new studio / game room. And so we've got a couple of big bookshelves in here, and it's a pretty open room, I guess. And there's a space here where we could set up a table in the middle if we wanted to. We don't really have a table set up in the middle right now, but I think it's going to be a real nice kind of open and comfortable space to be able to play. I was sort of thinking about maybe putting a stereo in here, or maybe a TV, but not if we're playing games, but something where we could just have this be a place where we can come upstairs and relax.
Very good. Okay, so I guess my next question would be, what makes up, I guess, not even a game room, but a good gaming space? What kind of essential elements do you have? Well, I mean, obviously, where are you going to play? You're going to play at the table.
Yep.
Now, what kind of table do you prefer for games?
It depends on how big of a game you're playing. I kind of just like a four-person card table. Mm-hmm. If it's something that's going to be portable, that, you know, but something like that is usually good enough for a little four-player game. I don't like to have too much extra table space, you know. Like, I know Cody has a big, what's the diameter of the table?
I was about to mention that. You got me thinking of our table. We have a 5-foot round table, and it's made by a company called Lifetime. You see them actually a lot in convention halls and things like that. They're very sturdy. They're not the best looking tables, but they're durable, and
yeah,
they're
sturdy, like white plastic.
Yeah,
they're
kind of like that hard white plastic top. And we have a 5-foot diameter, and we got round because I really prefer that for role playing games, where kind of everyone is around the table, you know, no one's kind of stuck at the very end and can't hear, you know. It's very good for that kind of things. But for board games, especially like 2-player board games,
it's weird.
it's weird because you have to be sitting right next to each other. It's hard to be sitting across from each other, and you have all of this real estate that you're not really using.
Yeah, you're either right next to each other on the table and it's kind of strange, or you're on the opposite side and you're both having to reach all the way in the middle of the table to you know, mess with the pieces and stuff. So I think if your game room is primarily going to be role-playing games, I think a round table is perfect. And actually, the sessions that we've had at Cody's place of role-playing games, It is perfect because everybody can sit around and see each other. And
it's enough room for like a battle mat or miniatures in the middle if you're playing a game that has that.
Yeah, room for books and dice, even for drinks and snacks and that kind of stuff.
All right.
But yeah, for me being mainly board gaming, I think something like a small square or rectangular table might end up being better.
Absolutely. Now, you mentioned earlier thinking of maybe putting a stereo or even a TV. What kind of auxiliary things would you consider putting in? I know we have a stereo in ours mainly for, we have people that come and run RPGs. Our apartment's kind of like the hub of where people come and run
their
games.
Place to be.
It's the place to be. I'm not going to lie to you. And if you're down the way, give me a call. You know, we'll hook you up. But we have a stereo set up to where people can, you know, put in their laptop or their iPod and run music through that. And say, if I'm in there working on something, I listen to a baseball game or what have you. But we didn't put a TV in there mainly because that just, to me, that opens up a can of worms because it's like, hey, let's play Halo instead of Keltis or, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, let's watch the game. It's kind of like, I like the idea of a focus. Like, a stereo is okay, but I like the idea of kind of a focus. You go in the game room to game.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I think that the reason I mentioned TV in the in respect to this room here is the fact that it's a multi-purpose room.
Sure.
And it's going to be both the guest bedroom. And I was almost more thinking of the fact that my wife, who does a lot of crafting stuff with... she does like makes greeting cards and does jewelry and that kind of stuff. That if she was up here for a long period of time working on something, it might be nice to have either music or even a TV where she could just, you know, glance at that while she's working. But I agree with you that if you're making a dedicated gaming space that is just for gaming, I think you got to keep the TV out of there unless you really want to have video games be a part of what you consider gaming. I like it a lot better just to have all of the gaming accoutrements surrounding you. One thing I love about Cody's game room is that he has put these little shelves on his wall, and he actually has like Dungeons & Dragons miniatures displayed on the wall. He has some great artwork on the wall from like Eberron. I think Eberron artwork.
A few years ago, as a Christmas present, I got a lithograph from an artist called Wayne Reynolds, and he did a lot of the covers for the D&D Eberron books. And it's a signed lithograph by him, so I got it framed, and I have that hanging up.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
So that even brings up that question about what kind of... are you all right there, buddy?
I'm going to make it.
You got to stop smoking those unfiltered.
Yeah. Let me tell you about gaming.
But that's another question is what kind of artwork and what kind of things do you want to decorate with? Because, you know, there's lots of things you can do to make the gaming space useful as far as having a table and you know, that kind of stuff. But you know, what kind of things would you want to put around you to make it feel more gamerly?
Sure. This is where it walks a fine line as how much geek you want to show. Because I know the one school of thought is, it's a game room, go all out. You know, I want the Larry Elmore posters on the wall. I want dragons. I want swords and axes on the wall. You know, you just go, you know, paint the walls black. You know, just go completely. And then you have the other school of thought where... it's like, well, we're going to have a lot of non-gamers over, and if they walk into this room or if we play, you know, a game of Ticket to Ride in here, they won't be completely freaked out.
Right.
And I went for a balance in that. Like, you know, it's not completely crazy, but it's definitely a geeky type of room. And my main thing was I didn't want to stick it into kind of one genre. One thing I've been really trying to do with that room is... It's mainly role-playing heavy. I don't have, like, I mean, I don't know how much board game artwork there is, but I do know some people that have, like, scanned or copied their covers to different board games and, like, kind of mounted them on foam core or something and put them on the wall as decoration.
Oh,
it's really, it's really cool. Like, they took, you know, say they really like the cover of The Descent. They'll take, you know, the cover to it and mount a copy of it on the wall, and it actually looks really cool.
You kind of lose the box, though.
No. They scan a copy of it, print the copy, like a color copy.
Oh, okay.
They don't actually take the lid.
No, I don't know.
John, geez.
Sorry.
But since mine role-playing heavy, I try to get something from about every genre. I'm still kind of working on it, but there's, you know, there'll be a Star Wars thing over here or a, you know, fantasy thing over here, something like that, you know, just to keep it going and make it a good place for role-playing, you know, get the imagination flowing.
Well, that's one thing. Other thing to consider is, who else is going to be using this room? Now, you have the benefit of having a fiance and soon-to-be wife that is big-time gamer.
Mm-hmm.
She's just as much into it as you are.
Sure.
And so she's into role-playing games and all that kind of stuff. And so all of this geek display that might be in the room, she not only will tolerate it, she likes it, right?
Absolutely.
And so she would probably contribute to that. But I know of many, many husbands out there who whose wives... do not subscribe to the geek culture as much as Kaylin does. And so, you know, it might be a matter of how much can be tolerated. So, you know, if you've got a room that if you got like the gamer cave in the basement, you know, that's one thing. I think you can kind of go all out. But I think any, like you said, anytime when non gamers are going to be in the room, you want to be kind of careful of how much you show that off.
Absolutely. So thinking about that, what essentials would you say are required for any good game room or gaming space?
Okay, well, definitely a table, like we mentioned there. I think a bookshelf is a pretty much an essential, whether it's for role playing books or geek books of any kind, or you know, board games.
I just love the look, like especially in here. I just like the look of shelves full of games with different box art. I mean, it's very superficial, obviously, but it's just neat. It's like you're looking around, oh, that's cool. It's like, hey, small world,
it's really colorful, and you know, I always, whenever I can, spine my games, so I put them, you know, vertically, and I think that makes for a kind of a neat look as well.
Yep.
And very, very colorful. So I think a bookshelf or two or three would be really good to hold your games and all of your stuff. What about for things like smaller things, like for dice and stuff like that? Because I've got a lot of little bits and pieces that I don't really have a good place to put those.
Well, what we did for our game room is we have this huge glass kind of rectangular prism thing with an open, and you know, it's mainly like a decorative vase you'd put glass beads or whatever in.
Oh, okay.
No, we just filled it with dice.
Oh,
neat. We took all of Caitlin's dice, we took all my dice, dumped them all in there. We even bought a pitcher of dice at a convention, like from the Chessex booth, and
in
there.
Like what, $40 for a big pitcher of dice? Yeah.
So we have this huge, it doubles as a centerpiece, but also we've gotten a lot of mileage out of it. When people come over to game, there's always that guy who forgets their dice or doesn't have enough. Or
I've been that guy.
You've been that guy many times. And so they can just kind of put their hand in this thing and just grab whatever dice, because we have all sorts.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got that. You can make a decoration out of it. So not to sound too much like, you know, a TLC show, but, you, you know, you can get a lot of a form with the function there. It's
you can
like,
make a chair out of dice.
Make a chair out of dice. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
One thing I would mention for a game room is good lighting.
Because
I hate playing in rooms where the lighting is crap. And the one thing that I wish we had in my gaming room is track lighting and lighting right above the table.
Yeah.
That kills me, because it's like that's press for a board game, especially just having that light coming down right on it. We have kind of two floor lamps in the corners, and it's good, but it doesn't give you that light right there. And with that, sometimes you can have the light focused on the table and then kind of black everything else out, you know, for that real and kind of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire look, if you want to go with that.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to need to probably deal with in this room here, is because we have a couple of desk lamps right now, and there's the light from the computer monitor.
Mm-hmm.
But this isn't, as it is right now, it's not very good lighting for gaming.
No.
And we'll need to get some more lights in here in order to be able to see.
Right. So I'll close this conversation out with, if money were no object, if you could have your dream kind of game room, what kind of things would you have in it?
I think storage is important, and storage and organization, because I think when you have a very organized collection of games, it looks really good, and it's also, I think, more fun because you can find everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for folks with really big collections, you know, bigger than mine, I've got like 150 games, like I mentioned before, which isn't that really that big, but I'm getting to the point where I'm having trouble finding stuff sometimes.
Oh, no.
And so I want to have a you know, good storage for, like I said, small things like dice, maybe some little bins and that kind of stuff. So I think that's really important. I think the lighting that you said is that's really important too, but whatever's going to create kind of a cozy atmosphere. I think a really cool table. I mean, you know, you may have seen online, and they were at Gen Con this last year, company that made this thing called the Sultan gaming table, and it's like $10,000
American.
Yeah. I mean, it almost looks like a craps table. It's like that big.
I don't even think it would be that good of a gaming table. It would be good for like D&D.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be good for like Ticket to Ride or something like that. It's too big.
It almost looks like that you could even, when you take the lid off of it or whatever, you might be able to set up miniatures, war games stuff, like terrain and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, that maybe for something like that, but
not for $10,000.
I was thinking they actually have these tables that I can't remember what the name of them are, but you it's like a round table, and you can turn this sort of dial in the middle, and they kind of turn and rotate, and they expand. Mm-hmm. And those things look really cool, really neat. Yeah, so something like that would be kind of cool. What about you, Cody? What would be in your dream gaming room? Although I'm pretty jealous that you have the dedicated gaming space already.
It's only going to get better, and it's a plan it's something we plan to carry on when we eventually get a house, is to at least have some sort of gaming area.
And once you have the 4 or 5 kids, though, that might be kind of tough, huh?
Yeah, 4 or 5 kids. Ha ha! I laugh.
Okay.
But one thing I've had an idea of doing, and it's not even all that cost prohibitive, it's just kind of out there. I've never really seen anything like it. Is I want to have a hall of records or a hall of fame. I'm talking like
plaques on the wall or something?
Not plaques on the wall, not banners or anything, but I'm talking getting like a long piece of like shower board or some sort of dry erase board, you know, white, kind of putting it on the top trim of one of the walls. And then for a lot of the games that have points, put like the records, like Ticket to Ride. It's like best score, John Richard, September 19th, 2009, with a score of 155 or something. Yeah.
Wow.
I know it's completely dorky, and even other gamers kind of look at you like, oh, that's a really stupid idea. But I just think that would be neat, where you're going to play a game and you kind of look up. It's like, oh, John Richard got a 155. It's like, I think I could beat that.
Okay. Yeah, I can sort of see that.
Yeah, I know.
It's but if you're going to go all out with money being no object, you get like a scrolling LED or something.
Current leader.
I think that'd be kind of fun.
Have countries next to it. Oh, yeah. John Richard, USA, you know. World record, Olympic record. But basically, if money were no object, I probably wouldn't even go too crazy with it. I would just really expand, you know, get the really nice table, get the really nice lighting. Maybe get the speakers that are embedded into the wall, you know, for that kind of immersive. Because I'm that kind of GM. I have the sounds and I have the music. Yeah. You know, we talked about that in Deadlands. It's like I had people fooled for 10 minutes thinking.
Now, what about basements or attics? Now, you know, you have a apartment on the first floor, mm-hmm. and I've got a 2-story house, but we don't have a basement. We don't really have any attic spaces you can go up into. But, you know, what it seems like there's something kind of cool about having that, going down into that basement area.
Yeah.
I know there's lots of connotations of, you know, gaming
fit your mother's basement. Yeah. Right.
But, you know, what about a basement? Would that be kind of an ideal space, or would you prefer to, you know, keep it in a normal, you know, bedroom or study or office or whatever?
Well, I can say for Kayla and I, at least, you know, we're looking at getting a house here in the next year or two, and we're targeting it to be a basement. I like the effect. I grew up, my house growing up, my room was in the basement. So, yes, I was in my mother's basement when I was growing up. And I just thought, you know, this would be a really cool place for a game room, because it's out of the way. If you want to keep people away from the geeky stuff, you can just kind of, hey, don't go in the basement, you know. But it's nice. It's usually, you get kind of a cooler element down there. And like you said, it's just neat. We're going down to play some games. It kind of gets you feel more, you know, I guess, hunkered down, and you're like, all right, we're going to game. But
if the aliens attack, or
you're
the
good,
nuclear,
you know, you got your Twinkies and your Mountain Dew, you're good to go. But conversely, and I'll bring up someone we had on the show a while back, Ken Goad of Hoosier Gamers.
Yeah.
He has a gaming kind of rig set up in this attic loft kind of area,
uh-huh.
and it is awesome. I mean, it goes in there, it has like the completely pointed ceiling on it.
Ooh.
Like it comes to an exact point, and it just has this very unique look. And it might be the fact that it almost has a secret kind of a bookcase entrance to it. Like, if I remember right, you have to move some sort of bookcase to get into it, so it could be a completely hidden room.
Okay, so see, yeah, if I had if I had no money is no object, that would totally be it. I'd have to have something that has a secret entrance.
Oh,
to
yeah,
it.
You know, you pull, put the candlestick back, you know. but something like that's cool. It's all in how you use the space. If you have a unique room that you could really do something with, I think that would make an excellent gaming area. It's just doing the most with what you have. You know, organization is key, but presentation is key as well. It's like I'm a sucker for cool looking gaming rooms.
Yeah,
I went to one guy's house one time where I'm surprised his wife let him do it. It was a gaming room. It was kind of like basically a dining room. It was right off of the main kind of foyer there. And the walls were painted like stone in a dungeon. And like these lamps that looked like torches, but they were normal lamps. And this was like right next to the modern kitchen. It's like you went from the kitchen to the dungeon. And it had this huge setup. It had a projector set up to where you could hook it up to do D&D maps, and it would project the map right onto the table. So you never have to drop them. I mean, it was, but it wasn't hidden away. That was the thing that surprised me. It was just like you walk house, dungeon, house.
There was no button you push with all the walls turned over.
it was weird. So,
well, you know, and I think that just brings up the point, though, and maybe the point of all this is that the environment that you game in matters. Mm-hmm. You know, that you can game, you know, at your kitchen table, and that's fine and everything, but being in an immersive sort of experience or in a dedicated space, I think really adds to the enjoyment of things. And I'll give you an example here in the great city of Indianapolis. There's a game cafe just near where I work called the Arsenal Game Room and Cafe.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
Thanks, Cody.
No problem.
And the upstairs part of it, when you walk in, is like a little cafe restaurant sort of place. There's even a really tiny game counter that has some mm-hmm. products for sale. But when you go down into the basement,
oh, that's it.
Yeah, they have it divided up into three different themed areas. The first one, when you go down, is called like the boardroom, mm-hmm. and it basically looks like a conference room where you can have meetings and that kind of stuff. The middle room looks almost kind of like cyberpunk.
Yeah,
it looks like kind of
the back alley.
Yeah, it's got like graffiti on the walls and everything,
chains and caution tape, things like that.
And then when you go back into the very back, that is the dungeon.
The coolest of the rooms.
Yeah, and so they have it set up with the walls painted like that, and I think there's like a skeleton tied to a
skeleton in a cage.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. And so you can, I think there's like a cover charge of, I haven't been there in a while, so it might be, I think it's like $5. Mm-hmm. And you can go down there for as long as you want and play in that environment. And Cody and I have met several times, sometimes play HeroScape, actually, down in that dungeon room.
Now, I know what you're thinking, listeners. It sounds stupid. It sounds silly. I didn't have a gaming room at the time, but don't knock it till you tried it. Like, we played a game of HeroScape like in that dungeon room with that set, and it added a lot to the feel. I don't know. It was pretty neat.
It did, and I think
we played Doom there once.
Yeah, we did. That's right. Uh-huh. And so, you know, the environment really does matter. And so, if you have the opportunity to have a dedicated space where you can kind of geek it up a little bit, you know, or you know, if you're a Euro gamer and you wouldn't consider yourself a geek in that way, that sort of RPG direction, then you know you can Euro geek it up, you know, and put big Velvet Elvis portraits of Reiner Knizia on the wall if you want to, but
just put some beds and some pillows.
Okay, all right.
You see what I did?
Yeah, but you know, whatever you can do to make the space your own, and it's kind of a part of your hobby. You know, people who do games like miniature war games, they play the game, but then painting the miniatures and building them, that's part of the hobby. And so it's sort of the truth here as far as building your gaming room, that making it your own and is kind of helping your the things that you like in your hobby to shine.
Absolutely. And one of the main things that got me excited when we were talking about this topic before the show is that I would love to really get some emails on this, either definitely pictures if you have them. Take pictures of your gaming space, whether it's the ultimate gaming room or just your kitchen table. By all means, send them, or just descriptions or your thoughts on it. And definitely send it to the Game On Inbox at gameoninbox@gmail.com. And I would love to see what you have and what suggestions you'd have to make the best gaming space possible.
Right. And if you have any pictures that you'd like to upload to our guild, if you go to our guild on BoardGameGeek.com, it's really easy to upload pictures there and share with all the other folks in the guild of you know, what your gaming space looks like.
Right. And I'll take pictures of mine. We can take some pictures here in the in the chateau, in progress.
And be proud of where you game, you know. Absolutely. I mean, even if it is just a kitchen table, you know, set up a game maybe and just take a picture of your kitchen table if that's where you play.
There you go.
You know, wherever you're having fun with games, it's worth showing off.
Well, we've talked about where to play games. Why don't we talk about a game now?
That sounds good. Let's get into the big world of Small World.
Ah, I see what you did. Very nice.
Well, thank you.
Buy, try, or deny. Every episode of Game On, we review a game and offer our opinions to help you decide whether a game is worth spending your hard-earned money on. If we say that a game is a buy, we definitely recommend that you go to your local gaming store or online retailer and purchase it immediately. If we say the game is a try, we think it's a good game and definitely worth playing, but the game may or may not appeal to a certain audience, or it has one or two flaws that may keep you from enjoying it fully. If we deny a game, there is definitely something seriously wrong with the game, and we recommend that you let it continue to collect dust on your game store's shelf. So let's get started.
welcome to this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny. This episode, we're talking about the brand new hotness in board gaming right now from Days of Wonder, Small World.
The sexy pick.
The sexy pick. And I'll tell you what, if you listen to more than one podcast, I'm sure that all of them have reviewed this game or mm-hmm. are going to. So we'll go ahead and add our voice to the masses here.
We're the only one you need, though.
That's right. The only one that matters, I guess. So Small World is a game that is actually a remake and a retheming of a game that came about 10 years ago called Vinci. And if you've never heard of Vinci, I'm not surprised. I had never heard of it either.
I'm sitting here going, oh, really? Oh, that's very interesting.
I had never heard of the game until I heard of Small World. And so both of these games were designed by Philippe Cayart. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Probably not. And it was came out this year, and it's for 2 to 5 players. It retails for about $50, and you can find it a whole bunch of places, including your friendly professional gaming store, which we would encourage you to support. So in this game, you're going to be playing one or more of a series of fantasy races. And by fantasy, I mean things like orcs and
elves and halflings and ghouls and
right. You know, I said
no goblins. Surprisingly,
no goblins. But I mean, things like even just things like humans,
mm-hmm.
Skeletons, rat men, sorcerers, things like that. So there's 14 different things. Yeah, and the idea is that you're going to be trying to claim territory on this board that represents a world that is
small,
too small. It's a small world after all. So you're trying to claim. Did you like that?
That was good.
Okay,
a little weird.
I'm glad I found that. That was good stuff there. I wish they would put that in the Disney ride, the yodeling. That
I'm going on it the first time in September. So
oh yeah.
So Small World, we'll see.
Awesome. You got to bring back a report about how that worked out. Anyway, okay. So back to the game. So the game comes with a lot of really nice components, and they're all of the cardboard variety. For those of you that are into plastic miniatures and lots of dice. Not really the game for you, no. I don't think.
And even though I'm that guy, this game doesn't need them. I mean, the cardboard, even the copious amounts of cardboard, does it just fine.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I have any game in my collection that has more cardboard in this than, except for maybe Descent.
It took us quite a while to punch everything out.
Oh, yeah, just tons of these counters. And they're very nicely organized in the box, so you shouldn't have a problem. And the little tokens that represent the different races in the game, there's a really nice box for those that has a little plastic lid on it. So it should be easy to keep those organized. But the game comes with 2 boards. And I think this is a really great idea in that depending on whether you're playing 2, 3, 4, or 5 players, you're going to play with a completely different board. Mm. So there's a slightly smaller board for 2 and then 3 players, and then another one for 4 to 5 players. Yep. So Cody and I had an opportunity to play a 2-player game of this. But I think just from our gameplay, we've gotten a pretty good idea of what a 3 or 4 or 5 player game would be like. But the basic game idea is that you're trying to claim different regions on this map, and that just represents just a random location. It's not like any actual real map of the world. And for every location that you're able to claim, at the end of your turn, you're going to get a victory coin for that.
Okay, good.
Not a victory point, but a victory coin.
Much better.
And so you're going to play a series of 10 rounds, and then whoever has the most of these victory coins at the end is going to be the winner. So the thing that's interesting, though, is that as you claim these territories, you're going to eventually kind of run out of steam with the race that you've chosen. And you'll find that you can't really push any farther into the territory, and you just get kind of stuck. But that's not the end of the game for you. What you can do is you can choose to put that race into decline. And then once you put a race into decline, you'll still get points for any of the races that are on things that you've already claimed. But it'll be a lot easier for those declined races to be overtaken in later turns.
And rarely do you reap the full benefit from races you put in decline.
Right, right. But that will, by putting one in decline, that'll allow you to choose a different race. And there's always going to be 6 races on the table that you can choose from. And so at the very beginning of the game, you're going to start off by choosing one of these races, and they're listed in a row. There's like 5 of them. No, there's 6 of them. And if you choose the one that's at the very top, then it's free. But as you go down the list there, if you choose the second one, then that's going to cost you one victory point. If you choose the third one, it'll cost you two victory points.
Victory coins.
Victory coins.
Sir.
And you're going to start off the game with five victory coins. And so the way that you're going to pay that victory coin is, let's say you decided to pick the second one on the list there. And these are all represented by these big, thick cardboard tokens that you'll take. If you wanted to pick the second one, then you're going to take the victory coin and put it on the first one. And so that'll be kind of a reward for whoever decides to take that first race in a later turn. They'll get that victory coin. So the races that seem least desirable are going to become more desirable as you go on, because they'll have more and more victory points piled onto them. So you're going to get this race, and then in almost kind of a puzzle piece fashion, your race token is going to have a special ability that is attached to it, or that's butted up right against it. That's another little token there. And so every race is going to have its own special ability. And these are randomized, which I think provides a lot of replayability.
And I have to tell the listeners, John is looking at the Small World player card right now, which is ginormous.
It is actually the size of the box. It's the width and the length of the box.
It's all very useful information and very helpful, but it's just when he's handing out, here's your player card. My goodness.
And we've played lots of games with little reference cards in them, and you know, this one is enormous. So it's actually, the player card is bigger in diameter and length and width than the rule book.
Yeah.
But it does have a lot of good information on it. So special powers might be things like Berserk or Forest or Fortified or Commando. There's
I like Fortified.
Yeah, and there's 20 of these different special powers that you can choose from, or that will be chosen for you, I guess. And so if you have like the Dragon Master power, for example, and then you happen to also have the Orcs, then they would be Dragon Master Orcs.
Sure.
And the when you take that race and that special power together, that's going to be the race that you're going to be using for as many turns as you want to use it for. And then you're going to take a number of these race tokens, which represent kind of your soldiers or whatever, and that's going to be equal to the sum of two numbers. There's a number at the bottom of the special power card and a number at the bottom of the race card, so you can play the race card in this game.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Wow.
Sorry. And so you're going to add up those two numbers, and that is going to be the number of cardboard tokens that you get for that particular race. And we found that I think it was anywhere from like, you know, 8 to 12, something like that. And so you'll grab all of those, and then you're going to start your turn out after you've selected your race by conquering a particular part of the board. Now, when you come onto the board, you have to start at a territory that is either on the border of the board or at the coastline. There's some like sea areas, and so it has to be kind of at the coastline there. And then you're going to start deploying your troops into the and conquering these areas. And the way it works is that it takes two race tokens to claim an area that doesn't have anything else in it. And then you're also going to have an additional troop for any one of the following things that might be in there. If you go into a mountain area, the mountain areas actually have a big chunky piece of cardboard that looks like a mountain to kind of help remind you that you're going to need an additional token. So I think in Scott Nicholson's review, I thought this was really
is golden.
Good, the way that he said it, is that it's going to be two race tokens plus however much cardboard is already on the space.
That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah. So if you had a mountain space and then one of your opponents had two tokens on it, then that's two plus the mountain, which is three, plus the two tokens from the other person's race, that's five. So you would need to have five race tokens to be able to overtake that particular territory. And so you're going to be kind of going around the board, conquering these different areas, and it's in sort of a risk-like fashion, in that you always have to leave one token behind if you move your troops around. But you're going to do this, and there's some other little mechanics as to how you're going to claim things. And then at the very end of your turn, you're going to count up how many territories you're in control of, and you're going to get that many victory coins. And then it goes to the next player, who will start their first turn out by selecting a race and a power and that go together, and then they'll do the same thing. Now, for future turns, it's the same sort of idea, except you're not going to be selecting a race at the beginning of every turn. You'll have to decide at the beginning of your turn, do you want to keep going with the race that you already have on the board? In which case, you'll then be able to conquer more things and just try to continue to add to your territory. Or you can decide to put your race into decline, in which case you're going to turn over your tokens and leave only one token on each of the territories that you have left. And the back of the token is kind of this gray, sad, you know, in decline version.
Down, yeah,
washed out version. So, and that'll show that that race is in decline. Then that'll be the end of your turn after you've put it in decline, but you'll still count up the number of territories that you have and will get victory points based upon those areas. So it's a turn where you're not going to gain any additional victory points, but you'll kind of get the ones that you already are in control of. Then in your next turn, you'll be able to select a different race and start over from there. So part of the strategy in this game is to be able to figure out when to put races into decline, when to bring out brand new races to be able to maximize your victory points. Because one of the things it's difficult to... it's easy to forget is that you score at the end of every round.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important if you can grab a lot of territory, then you can get a lot of points in one turn. But if you spread yourself too thin, you might find that your opponents are able to kind of usurp the territories that you've just claimed, and then you won't get as many victory points on your next turn because, you know, you'll lose that turn when you put things in a decline. So you'll just keep on going for 10 turns, and at the end of that, you'll add up all your victory points. So, victory coins, yes. And so a lot of the flavor and variety in this game comes from the different races and their special abilities and these special powers. So in addition to the special power tokens that I mentioned, there's 20 of those, the 14 races themselves each have a special thing that they do. So like some of the things that we played were like the skeletons, which during troop redeployment, which is the phase where you're going to, after you conquered everything that you want to conquer for that turn, you can kind of move around your troops and move your tokens around and distribute them however you want. But it says that you'll take one new skeleton token from the tray for every two non-empty regions that you conquered. So basically, you're going to get some additional troops for everything, every two spaces that you conquered. And so it's kind of things like that. So Cody played the ghouls for a few turns in our game. And one rule there is that all the ghouls will stay on the map even when going into decline.
Mm-hmm.
So usually when you go into decline, you're going to take all but one of those tokens off the board entirely. But here you'll get to keep them there. So that'll allow you to keep your territories that are in decline for longer because they're going to be more difficult to conquer. So it's kind of stuff like that. A lot of variety in the game as far as the special powers go. And the game plays pretty quickly. I think it was less than an hour, I think.
Yeah, and that's with kind of learning the rules and getting started there. And
The rule book is only like 7 pages long.
Yeah.
And then they have a whole page that just tells you where to put all the cardboard in the box.
You think we're joking. No. I mean, there's a diagram.
lots of
really nice box inserts, though.
Very nice.
Very, very nice.
Well designed. Mm-hmm. And so that's the basics of Small World. And Cody, what did you think of Small World?
Small World was interesting to me because it looks a lot more complex than it is. I mean, with just all the bits and just kind of at first glance, it looks like it's going to be kind of a deep strategy game. But then you learn it and you get a few turns into it, and it's deceptively simple.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you can blitz through in about 45 minutes. So I enjoyed it. It was like I said, it was almost very deceiving. I like the art style on it, and I like. They pretty much do all of the stereotypical fantasy, like the elves are very effeminate, and the dwarves, you know, have a big thing of ale in their hand, and they're
it's very cartoony.
Yeah, you know, it's fun, great art, just like any Days of Wonder game. The board's a little weird as far as, I mean, I like the different boards, you know, the flipping, but it's like they made the boards look like they were out of the 70s. It's like they blurred kind of the art a little bit, and to me, I mean, that's maybe an artsy nitpick, but everything else in the game looked really good, and then the board was just kind of, it was okay.
I like the board. That's just me, but I can sort of see what you're saying, that it was a little blurry, I think, yeah. So we only play the two-player game, but I think that, like I said, from having played it, I think it's going to scale really well.
I do, too.
I'm looking forward to playing this with more people, but you can, you know, just having the larger board... The 2-to-3-player board is really a lot smaller. It's just a bifold board.
Right.
And then the one for 4-to-5 players is a fourfold board, so much bigger. But you have so many races to choose from. I just think you're not going to get real tired of playing this game because there's going to be lots of different things to choose from. And one thing, that Cody, that you mentioned during our game was that it seems like if you learn the different special powers, and you kind of know them by heart after you played for a while, there is a lot of strategy that you can put into the mm-hmm. game, because you can really look at particular special powers, and you know, on that list of races that you can choose from, you can say, oh, maybe I want to choose that one. Maybe it's worth it to me to spend 3 or 4 victory coins to get that one that's farther down the line, because it really has an ability that can be used in this part of the map that I'm in. You said that was at the point in the game when things, your opinion of it changed a little bit. So,
well, speaking of opinions, let's get into it.
All right. Well, you want me to start?
Absolutely. John, for Small World, buy, try, or deny?
This game, even though I already bought it, is a definite buy. And, you know, I think it's real easy for people to jump on the Days of Wonder bandwagon and just say, well, it's a Days of Wonder game, and they don't put out 15 games a year. They put out about one big box board game mm-hmm. a year, maybe. And so it'd be real easy to say that because there's such high quality components that it's definitely going to be a buy. But I mean, there's nothing I could say about this game in a real negative way. It's very well designed. The components are beautiful. It's a lot of fun. It's quick. And it has a factor in it that very few games have, and that's that scalability from 2 up to 5, that I can play this with Cody or with my wife. I think my wife would really enjoy this, actually. Mm-hmm. And I can play this with her, or I can get a big group of folks together and play, and it's going to be the same amount of time to play. It's going to be easy to teach. It has all those kind of qualities that make it just a great overall game to have in your collection. So definitely give this one a buy. So Cody, Small World, buy, try, or deny?
This game was a definite try up until the point where John mentioned, where I stopped and said, this is the point in the game where it went from a try to a buy. So I give it a buy because just seeing all of kind of the smaller strategies that can really be mined out after a few plays. This game, it's very deep. And like I said, it looks a lot more complex on the surface. While it's not a difficult game to learn, it's got some deep strategy to it, to where you play it a few times and with the randomization, you can really get some good strategy going on. And I think the scalability, it's not something that was just kind of tacked on. There was some real work put in for balance between a 2-player game and a 5-player game. So they did their homework on it, and there's not been a Days of Wonder game that's come out that I haven't liked.
Wow.
And I mean, that's pretty bold.
That's a bold statement.
I would buy any Days of Wonder game. You can quote me on that. So add this one to the list because it's unique. If we go with the Jones theory here, there's really no other game like it.
Yeah, that's true. There's not like it's pretty 15 unique in the genre that you can choose from. Yeah.
So I give it an emphatic buy.
All right. Well, that's two big buys for Small World. So if you have a chance to see this at your friendly professional gaming store or online, then be sure to pick it up.
Absolutely.
All right, well, I think that just about wraps up this great show. It was a great show.
I thought so.
On Gaming Spaces, and I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be coming back to you in 2 weeks for another great episode of Game On. We'd like to remind you of a few things before we go. First of all, we want to remind you that Game On with Cody and John is now a proud member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network.
A proud member,
and there's lots of other great shows to that are featured on the Pulp Gamer website at pulpgamer.com. One that we particularly want to mention this week is the D6 Generation, which is a great podcast about all kinds of games similar to what we talk about, except they also have quite a focus on miniatures wargaming and things like War Machine and Warhammer 40K. Those guys are really into those games. Yeah. They know a lot about them. And I found that even though I don't play those games, their conversation about it is so interesting that I find myself still being interested in what they're saying, even though I'll listen for 5 minutes and go, I have no idea what they just said.
But that sounds really cool.
But it sounds cool, and I think I'll keep playing. So I think Cody and I even sort of are toying with the idea of maybe giving one of these miniatures games a shot. Perfect. So we'll stay tuned
on that.
We'll keep you posted. But the D6 Generation, it's a great show. It's a really long show. It's about 3.5 hours long. And that might seem daunting to some of you podcast listeners out there who are used to shorter shows, but I think it's really great because it takes me several days to get through it, and it's really entertaining. So it kind of keeps you going for a much longer period of time. So check out the D6 Generation. Their website is thed6generation.com, or you can check them out on pulpgamer.com.
Right, and we also encourage you to send us an email, especially on our topic this episode about gaming spaces. You can do that at gameoninbox@gmail.com. And we'd also encourage you to upload pictures of your gaming space or whatever else you'd like that's within reason to our guild on Board Game Geek, which we'll link to in the show notes as we always do.
Yeah, and be sure to send us some suggestions for Cody and his fiance Kaylin for great two-player
Absolutely.
Games. They're looking for some good two-player games to play, and be sure to put that in your
We can't play
as
Castle
well.
Keep all the time. It's a good game, but
you
it's
get tired
Castle
of it
Keep,
after a while.
Right,
exactly.
You know, it's like you play three games, well, that was Castle Keep.
Right. So I think that's just about all we need to tell you for this episode. Is that right?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, join us in 2 weeks. We'll have another great show for you. And until then,
game on.